It is time for Travel Tales with Fergal, and joining us as ever is Fergal O'Keefe, a native of Ennis and the creator of the Travel Tales with Fergal podcast. Good morning to you, Fergal.
Good morning. Great to see you.
Thanks very much for being with us. So, we're going to be talking about a place far, far away from Ireland, Nepal.
Yeah, it's a magical place. I don't know if have you ever been there? It's so well. You know, I think everybody feels like they know the place because it's so well known with the Sherpas and Everest, and there's been loads of movies lately. So it's an area that I've always loved and I always wanted to go to. And I was lucky to get the opportunity at the start of in 2000. So I went there, and there's a walk called the Annapurna Circuit, very famous walk, which, you know, there's 14 mountain ranges over 8,000 meters, and the Annapurna is one of them, one mountain. So I did this 20K trek around the mountain, basically, and it was one of the best experiences. The line I use is the longest walk I've ever done and the best walk that I've ever done. It was absolutely amazing.
It sounds absolutely incredible. And, you know, Nepal is probably not somewhere that people would think of, Fergal, for, you know, to go for on their holidays. Yeah. I mean, I've never been there. I have spoken to people from Nepal, and obviously they're promoting their country and saying it's a wonderful place to visit. I would imagine the views in particular in Nepal with the mountain range and Everest are breathtaking.
It's unbelievable, and it's very easy to get to. So, I mean, like a lot of people go, say, and if they're going long haul, they go to, say, to Thailand. So it would take you as long, say, from London, you can get a direct flight to Kathmandu. And that's where most people arrive into the country. And, you know, it's a bucket list one, I think, for people who are big into walking. There's many walks around the world, but I suppose the most famous ones are actually Everest Base Camp and the Annapurna Circuit in Nepal. So for people that love walking, I would so recommend it. It's so completely different than anything that you've experienced. And in some ways it's similar, you know, there's a lot of Hindus and Buddhists there, but with there's similarities with the mountain region in India. But the Nepalese, it's a little bit more relaxed maybe than India. And the Nepalese people are very, stoic and quiet and humble and spiritual. So that really adds to it. I mean, when you get fly there, normally most people end up flying into Kathmandu. And, you know, as you're coming in, you can see the Himalayas and the distance and all that. It's a whole city full of Buddhist and Hindu temples. So, you know, it feels like an ancient medieval city when you're going into it, like with narrow streets. And you see when you're walking through the streets, you have like groups of Buddhists walking around, and you have the haze from the incense and the smell, and you can hear the chanting. So you kind of feel like you're going back into medieval times, but you feel very safe there. That's one thing I will say about the place. And because it is one of the top places for sort of walking in the world, and also with all the Everest expeditions as well, it's really geared up for tourists. Like, you know, there's loads of like sports shops, walking shops. The food is great. You know, they're quite geared up for Westerners, and they're famous sort of everywhere you go. There's like lovely chocolate cakes even when you're up the mountain.
Lovely.
And you're in the middle of nowhere. You go into like this little a hut, and they'll have lovely chocolate cake there. So that's kind of my memory. When I think of Nepal, I always think of chocolate cake, but it is absolutely like gorgeous place and very cheap. And as I said, very safe and completely different than anything that you've experienced before. So, and if you're any bit fit or into walking, the walks are no problem. You know, you just a bit like the Camino, you walk day to day through villages, and you don't have to book accommodation or anything like that. You literally just walk each day and then decide where you're going to finish. And, you know, there's every village is full of little B&Bs where you can stay, and there's different standards, you know, for your budget as well. It can be very cheap, or you can stay in nice places, but absolutely spectacular, I have to say.
I did wonder that, Fergal, when you suggested Nepal and Everest. There'd be very few people who will take on a holiday that involves scaling the summit of Everest. But even to go to Nepal and go on the Annapurna Circuit, whether you would have to do a bit of prep beforehand, you know, or you would have to be of a reasonable level of fitness, because there would be a lot of walking and hiking involved.
Yeah, I just say when I was doing it, and I didn't like prepare for it. I just was walking. So walking in Ireland and doing other walks. And if you're walking every day, then you can do it no problem, is what I would say. Sort of people, a lot of people, my listeners might have done some of the Camino and like that level of fitness. The only thing that you add into the mix, obviously, is the acclimatization, is the you're up in the mountains. So that can affect you. Like even when you go into Kathmandu, I think that's over 2,000 meters. If you think the highest mountain in Ireland is a 1,000.
Yeah.
And on the Annapurna circuit, the pass, I think it was something like 5,600 meters. So that is one thing that you have to be aware of, is the altitude fitness, or not fitness, but being used to it. And it's actually nothing to do with fitness, because just say I walked with my, she was my girlfriend at the time and now wife, Emer. And when we got to the pass in Annapurna, she just wanted to lie down, and she was saying, I just want to lie down for a few minutes in the snow to have a little rest. And I was like, going, I don't think that's a good idea. And we were lucky there was a couple behind us, you know, because when you're walking over, say, 20 days, you get to know people along the walk. And there was a couple, they were a Canadian couple, both were doctors. They just happened to be behind us. So they came up and they were like, no, you need to go down straight away. And then when we descended, you know, say 1,000 meters, Emer was fine. And she would be way fitter than me. You know, at that stage, she was doing triathlons and stuff. And even when I think I mentioned before, we did for our honeymoon, we did Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
And she actually got the altitude sickness there as well. So it isn't to do with your fitness. It's kind of just to do with your physiology and your makeup. And you kind of don't know until you do it. But generally, anyone can do it. If you're any bit fit, I would say that you can do it. You know, so for a bucket list, you know, like something we're going to talk about next week in the program is travel trends for the year. And one of the things they say, you know, that some people, not everyone, you know, some people have savings, you know, that haven't gone on a holiday for a couple of years. So they might have 3 years worth of money saved, and people might be a little bit more adventurous going abroad or to spend more. But a holiday like that actually wouldn't cost more. It's just the big thing is time. You know, like just say that walk, the Annapurna circuit is 20 days. Or the other famous one is you can walk to Everest Base Camp. And that is generally 10 to 15 days. So you do need a couple of weeks if you want to do it properly. And say the Annapurna, like just say if you fly into Kathmandu and you go to the place you go to is called Pokhara. For the Annapurna circuit or the Annapurna mountain range. And it's a real adventure town, a bit like, say, Queenstown in New Zealand or Chamonix in France, where it's a town built up for walkers and climbers and adventure sports. So there's an amazing atmosphere there, you know, with full of people like who are out for doing these adventure sports. And it's electric, I have to say. So that's where you start. And say for the Annapurna, I think I mentioned it last week, actually, that when I was doing that walk for 20 days, all I thought about was like the steak I was going to have in Pokhara yeah. when I came back. And there's great restaurants there. Like I didn't even mention it last week, but like the place I went to was like an Argentinian barbecue place, you know. So there's great, you know, so in other words, for tourists, like the standard of food is excellent. And, you know, you can get all your gear and things like that out there as well. There's no problem like that. So Annapurna circuit, I would say, is the more beautiful walk. And then the Everest Base Camp is kind of more, what would you say, like a box ticking one. It isn't as pretty to say, but still beautiful, you know. But Everest Base Camp is one that anyone can do over 10 to 12 days. You trek up. You generally, what you do is you go from Kathmandu place to Lukla. And that's very famous because you're flying in with mountains on either side within 100 meters of you, and you're flying into this little strip up in the mountains to land, and then you walk up from there. So that's a great experience to end up at base camp, and you're actually there where you see all the other people that are doing their Everest attempt. So that would be quite an experience for people.
I would imagine, Fergal, at any one time there are tons of people trying to climb Everest. Is it almost too crowded, or does it differ depending on what time of year you go there?
Yeah, do you know what? There's an amazing movie that just came out before Christmas, and it's called 14 Peaks. A guy called Nirmal Purja, who's Nepalese. And what he did is the 14 peaks are the 14 peaks over 8,000 meters. And the first person that did it over 15 years, then the record up to, I think it was like 6 years, but he did it in 6 months. And Everest, obviously, is one of those. And he took a famous photo about 3 years ago, maybe 2019 or 2018. And it was like a big snake of people going up to the peak of Everest. He was climbing, I think, I don't know if he took it actually while he was making that movie, but it was literally a snake of people, you know, so it can get very packed. And my podcast today of a guy called Damien Brown, who the reason why we're talking about it, I suppose, what got me thinking is because he had an Everest attempt, an Irish guy, last year. And I asked him about that. I thought it would be quieter last year because he was originally supposed to go to 2020, but with the pandemic, it was called off and he did it last year. And I was like, and was it much quieter? And he said it was actually busier because the Nepalese government, I think that, like, they gave out a couple, like, you know, maybe 450 passes to go up the mountain. And normally it's about 150, which mightn't sound like too much, but when you, what the way they do it is, it's May is the there's a certain season for actually summiting. They're usually like very short windows, and it's usually like a few days, you know, in May. So the problem is that everybody ends up going around the same time, and there can be huge queues, which, you know, kind of does. So a lot of the purest climbers sort of wouldn't do Everest now. It's kind of become more of a one for people, you know, that, you know, like so famous, you know what I mean? It really does capture the imagination, doesn't it, Everest, you know?
Oh, it does. Look, it's easy to understand why you have a fascination with it, and so many of us do. We know, we've seen all the documentaries, the films, and read all the books. Even getting to base camp, is that quite high up?
Oh, yeah. So base camp is about, I think, 5,400, 5,500. So the highest pass, say on the Annapurna circuit, the highest pass is 5,500, I think, and base camp is roughly the same. So if you think, like, you know, Cairn Toul is 1,000, this is, you know, 5,500 up, and that's your so the people that are up then, you know, they're usually probably up there in base camp for, if they're attempting Everest, they could be up there for like a month. So like staying in those conditions would be very hard on the body, and the higher you get up, then the harder it gets, because over 8,000 meters, they call that the death zone, and you know, that's where your body starts to, like, you know, fall apart essentially, or the oxygen levels are so low that you are slowly, once you're over 8,000 meters, all the time you spend there, you're slowly dying. So it's a matter of getting off that place as quick as possible. So base camp is very high as well. So and, you know, you see all the tents. I mean, it's like a tent city. Like Damien, when he was told, I was asking him what it was like there, and he was saying, like, he arrived and he was shattered when he got to, you know, really tired the day he got to base camp. And then he had another kilometer. Base camp is so big now with tents, it's like a tent city, that it took him, it was a full kilometer, which at that altitude, it took him hours to walk, because he was so tired to walk all, because his tent was at the very end of base camp. So now it's like a city. I was asking about his accommodation, and he was saying, you know, they all had their own little tents. And then there was like an area, a kitchen, kind of sitting roomy area tent, you know, there. And like you said, he was in the kind of the plebs version of the tent, but there's like first class ones where they have like beds in them and stuff. So, you know, there's different standards, because there's the way they do it is there's like climbing groups, and you kind of go with different climbing groups. But if you were doing, say, the walk to Everest Base Camp, you can just get a guide, or, I mean, you wouldn't even need a guide, to be honest, because the routes are so clear and you've got people on it. You know, like, just say when I did the Annapurna circuit, you don't need a guide, because it's a bit like the Camino. Mm. Every day you're walking, it's very obvious the route, and you just walk, you know, it's signed for the next village, and you just walk to that village. So, yeah, really, I have to say, for people, I couldn't recommend it enough as an experience, you know, just seeing that and seeing the climbers, you know, you're with walkers, but also because Annapurna is over, it's an 8,000 meter peak as well. So you see all the climbers there, and you're kind of, they're a different breed, you know. It's great. I love meeting them and talking to them and hearing their stories and why are they doing the climbing. Like, actually at the weekend, I was watching a documentary called The Alpinist, which is just out. It's amazing, about a Canadian, French-Canadian guy who was a solo climber, and they're just a different breed, those people that, that do that climbing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, even listening to hearing about someone climbing it, I kind of think, God, I'd never be able to do that. Like, to get to base camp, I think would be an achievement for me, because, you know, you mentioned the dead zone. It's a risky business climbing Mount Everest. It is, of course, the highest mountain above sea level on the planet, 8,848 metres. Apparently, there's a 14.1% fatality rate if that's the chance of dying on Mount Everest, over 200 climbing deaths. And then, of course, Fergal, not to scare anybody off, because we'll touch on this next. A number of Irish people have managed to achieve it, get to scale the summit of Everest, but many of the bodies remain there.
Yeah, and that's the mad thing, that when people now, that death zone, they call it, like over 8,000 metres, when they're doing that, like, so they like spend, they could be up on the mountain for like 2 months, and then, you know, there's like four camps. They end up on camp four, and they leave in the middle of the night. They usually, I think it's like maybe 800 meters they have to do on the last day, but they get up. It takes them, you know, they leave at probably 2 a.m, and they might get back the following night, you know, 8 or 9 the next night, nearly a full day doing it. But they're literally climbing over bodies of, because at that height, it's just too dangerous to take people down. So they're literally climbing over bodies to get there. And that's what they say, that they call it summit fever. So people who often, you know, they spend so much time, and they might be dreaming about this for all their lives. So when they get to that stage, there might be like 100, because, you know, just before you get to the peak, about 100 metres from the summit, or maybe 200 or 300, there's a place called the Hillary Step, where there's a little bit of climbing to get over, and that's where the bottleneck is. And just some people, you know, should be turning back at that stage, but they just, it's so close that they keep going. And they, because when you talk about those people who are dying, I bet you the vast majority of them actually died not on the way up, but on the way down. And then to add to it, this year, you know, they use oxygen when they're going for the summit. And this year, it was kind of a moral thing, a moral dilemma, you could say, because there was a bit of disquiet for people that were on Everest this year, because they were using up, you know, hundreds and hundreds of these oxygen canisters. And, you know, then it was COVID was like, that was last May. So COVID was major all over the world, and particularly in Nepal, and, you know, issues about lack of oxygen. And then you've got summit groups, you know, using oxygen up the mountain. So it was a bit of a tricky one for the climbers that were there this year. But so that added to it, you know. And then obviously this year on the mountain, the other danger was with COVID, and there was COVID outbreaks on the mountain with Sherpas, and Damien, he goes into it, Damien Brown in the podcast, he actually, that's why he was so tired coming up to base camp. He only realized at base camp that he actually had COVID, and he had to go fly by helicopter all the way back down to Kathmandu and then go back up again. And that's one of the things that they do actually in Everest is, you know, when the way they summit, they call it rotations. You start in base camp and you go up to camp one and back down again. Then you go up to camp two, back down to base camp. So you're going up and down to acclimatize over a month. So that takes some amount of work and some amount of energy. So by the time you get to the top, you can imagine the danger. People just ignore that when they're going then for the summit. And that's why I suppose there's so many deaths, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, very little Irish people, I mean, from an Irish people point of view, there's very little that have actually done it, you know.
Of course, John Burke of Armada Hotel fame managing it. I mean, I have to say, Fergal, if there was ever, not that you want to get COVID in any scenario, but if ever there was a place you didn't want to get it, it's Mount Everest, because where that's exactly the place where you need your full strength and energy and a good set of lungs. And I would imagine, I know you probably don't want to give the whole game away about the latest Travel Tales with Fergal podcast with Damien Brown, but I can only imagine how, given how long he'd been looking forward to climbing Everest, how devastated he must have been that it didn't quite work out.
Like, I am, as I said, I just love like every year following people. Usually if there's an Irish person going up on Everest, I would be generally following them. And, you know, because all of them now would be posting on Instagram and things like that. And I was following him every day as he was going up, and he was struggling just to get to base camp because he was late. His he had a daughter. He flew from Brisbane because his Australian partner, they had a daughter in April. I actually messaged him in March saying, is it going to be on? And he said he didn't know. That was like towards the end of March. And then in April, his daughter was born. And I texted him again and he said, yeah, I'm going tomorrow. So he was late. His group had already headed off. So he had to kind of rush up to base camp. And by the time he got there, he was shattered. And then at base camp, discovered that he had COVID. So in a way, he felt a little bit better because he couldn't figure out. He was going, gosh, I'm struggling just to get to base camp. How am I going to climb the mountain? So he had to go back and then went back up. And then, you know, spent a couple of weeks going up and down the mountain. And then Sherpas got COVID and a cyclone came in. And
a cyclone?
Yeah, yeah.
As if he didn't have enough to deal with. I think God was trying to tell him something.
Exactly. And that's what always happens around that window towards the end of March, the season's finishing. And he was one of the last people left on the mountain and he was getting ready to go. And then like a cyclone came in and destroyed Camp 3. And it was funny talking to him, actually, because he was saying at the time, you know, everyone in the camp was talking about like this magical weather. They call it like a weather window was coming. There's a magical weather window was coming in and it was going to be like no wind and sunny and gorgeous. And I was kind of going, I bet you that's the talk at base camp every year, you know, come with these magical weather windows. So, you know, the thing about these and the reason why I'd recommend people to it'll be on the Clare FM website today is, for me, it actually isn't whether someone makes Everest or not. It's the journey. It's like going through the Khumbu ice falls and what it was like with the Sherpas and the different camps and what it's like. I just love all that climbing stuff. If there's a book or a documentary about climbing or you know, about mountains or anything like that, I always watch them. So I just love that about all those details. So he goes into all that sort of stuff. And it was funny because, you know, it was an epic trip. It really was to Everest. He was planning to do it like six. He had already done five of the seven summits. But when he came back, I was going to him. So I presume you're going to have a little break now. And he said, no, the plan was he's now in the middle of training to row the North Atlantic from New York to Galway.
From New York to Galway, oh jeez.
in a two-man rowing boat. So he's already done. The first time I ever got to know this guy was back in 2018 when he was doing these amazing posts. He rowed solo from the Caribbean to the Canaries, which is kind of a little bit more southern, and the Gulf Stream kind of helps. But that was solo. God, he did that for 63 days.
Still an incredibly long journey.
Oh, but imagine now he's planning to do the North Atlantic. So he's going to do the route from New York to Galway, which means he's going through the shipping lanes. That movie where The Perfect Storm was.
Yeah.
He's going through that. And it's two guys from Galway that are doing it. Project Empire, it's called. And I would recommend people, or Damien Brown, he's called Owlstock on Instagram. And I'd recommend people to follow him because he's planning to do that this summer and arrive hopefully towards the end of the summer in the docks in Galway, where I would guess if they make it. They're going for a world record attempt. I think it was, so the record has stood, two Norwegian Americans did it back in, I think it was 1896. So it stood since then. I think it's about 55 days. But, you know, the weather obviously is going to be a big factor. So that'll be an amazing one. Imagine going from Everest into this. So, yeah, proper adventurer.
Yeah, right, thrill seeker. Best of luck to him on that. That's going to be a very interesting episode of Travel Tales with Fergal. And just to finish, Fergal, you mentioned that it's quite cheap when you get over to Nepal. In terms of actually getting there, though, and I'm particularly thinking of with costs of travel as we kind of hopefully emerge from the pandemic, is it expensive to get to Nepal?
So, you know, it's probably the same as, say, so you fly via London, but it's probably the same as flying to Bangkok, you know, maybe like or America, you know, so 500, 600, 700, that sort of thing. Or you could fly to Bangkok, actually, and then get a very cheap flight. It could be like 100 euros up to Nepal. So that could be an idea to combine. You know, you could actually go to, I'm just thinking now as a holiday would be good, because that's what I kind of did was I went up to did Nepal and then flew back to Bangkok and then went down to the beaches. So you could do the mountains and then come down and go to the beaches in Thailand if you had, say, a month. That would make a great trip. Oh, but but you can fly directly London to Kathmandu, you know, if you don't have that much time. And you can, and there's shorter walks. Like I did the Annapurna circuit, which is around the Annapurna range, but you can walk. There's about 6 day walk from Pokhara into the base of, not the base camp, but the bottom of Annapurna. So that, and there's day walks and things like that. And the other thing, Nepal, that you combine it with is they actually have jungles as well. So you can actually go and do safari and see like tigers and elephants and all those sort. So, you know, there's other things that you could actually go to Nepal as well as the Kathmandu. You could do safari, you could do the mountains. So it would make a great trip, actually.
It sounds like an incredible country. And thanks very much for taking us through it, Fergal. Always a pleasure chatting to you. It makes me realise how much of the globe I still have to cover every time I talk to you. But great stuff, and we'll chat to you again next week. That's Fergal O'Keefe, native of Venice, of course, and creator of the Travel Tales with Fergal podcast. And as you heard Fergal say there, the latest episode of Damien Brown will be up on the Clare FM website later today.